have tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and we're going out in the streets today on WGXC. At 10 a.m. after the news, we will speak with Tiffany Griga and Molly Stinchfield from the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. Griga is...
This is Ken Stringfellow of the Posies, Big Star, etc., and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Tuesday on the WGXC Morning Show, Azrael Story is organizing an equality protest in support of Black Lives Matter in Greenville, July 18th, and she'll preview the event on the WGXC Morning Show at 10 a.m., 90.7 FM WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai, a sculpture and architecture park and international residency center in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dusk until dawn. Art Omai presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC local news for Sunday, June 28th. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. City and State reports that lawmakers in Albany have a few more ideas for police reform. State Senator Zellner Myrie plans to introduce a bill to eliminate qualified immunity. That is a legal doctrine that means a public employee cannot be sued while they are doing their job, even if they may be violating someone's constitutional rights. Quote, victims of police brutality have been unable to get any sort of relief because at every turn the courts have used the doctrine of qualified immunity to shield officers from liability, unquote, Myrie said. Quote, in the absence of federal action, I think it's important for New York to step up and show people that we will hold police officers liable for misconduct, unquote. Reuters found that officers using the qualified immunity defense won 56% of excessive force cases in federal courts from 2017 to 2019. The police, though, want to keep their privilege. Quote, once again, our elected officials are dumping all of the liability for their decisions onto the police officer on the street, unquote, New York City Police Benevolent Association President Pat Lynch said. Quote, they make the laws, they set the policies, they pick the enforcement priorities, but when something goes wrong, they are the only ones who aren't held accountable, unquote. Meanwhile, in Schenectady, the county attorney Chris Gardner wants the state attorney general's office to investigate, quote, the discriminatory and illegal actions of David, unquote, of David Elmendorf, owner of an ice cream shop, who Gardner alleged used racial slurs in a text that said he doesn't hire black people. Quote, this racist rhetoric and admission of racial discrimination would constitute violations of the New York State Human Rights Law and Civil Rights Act of 1964, unquote, Gardner wrote in a letter he sent June 26 to the Attorney General's office. Quote, the time has come to deal swiftly and justly with an individual who spreads racist rhetoric and boasts of his refusal to hire individuals based on the color of their skin, unquote. The ice cream store owner has also been cited for numerous safety violations during the coronavirus pandemic. Online protesters were organizing a protest outside his Bumpy's Ice Cream Shop on June 28th. There are also protests planned June 28th in Rensselaer, Newburgh, Woodstock, and Ellenville at 6 p.m. on June 28th. Poughkeepsie holds a special city council meeting on police reform. Anyone can register for the meeting at a link on the WGXC newsroom and send an email to an address on the WGXC newsroom for 3 minutes of speaking time. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Greene County Sheriff's Office has announced it is launching a new overdose response program. The Impacted Citizens Program was developed in partnership with the Greene County Mobile Crisis Assessment Team, the Mental Health Association of Columbia Green Counties, and the Columbia Green Addiction Coalition. Under the new program, a member of the Sheriff's Office staff will follow up on all reported overdoses in Greene County within 24 to 48 hours to offer access to support services such as mental health, rehabilitation, or counseling for both the person that overdosed as well as their family and friends. Other components of the program include detailed training for law enforcement and other first responders. During the recent COVID-19 lockdown, Greene and Columbia counties experienced an increased number of overdoses. In Greene County, there have been a total of 39 overdoses since March 16th. Three of those were fatal. During the same time period in 2019, there were 16 overdoses and 3 fatalities. Columbia County had 27 overdoses and 3 fatalities since March 16th, compared to 7 overdoses and 2 fatalities in 2019. Quote, the Greener Pathways program is glad to be part of the new Greene County Sheriff's Impacted Citizens program and has actively participated with many other agencies in the planning to get the program to this point, unquote, Program Director Carl Quinn said. Greener Pathways is the mobile outreach program for Twin County Recovery Services. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union that Hudson Riverkeeper has announced its opposition to a proposed waste-to-fuel plant at the site of the former BASF chemical factory in Rensselaer. Quote, there are significant environmental justice concerns in the area of the proposed project, unquote, the environmental group said in a recent letter to the State Department of Environmental Conservation, citing the facility's proximity to the water and the industry that already exists in the city. Riverkeeper's letter noted that Rensselaer, with a population of 9,300 in a city of just 3.5 square miles, already has the S.A. Dunn facility, a major construction debris landfill, as well as a gas-fired power plant and an Amtrak station and rail hub. Quote, the combined effects of these form an overwhelming assault on the health and well-being of Rensselaer residents, unquote, Riverkeeper wrote. The city is also the site of a state Superfund site where the BASF chemical plant used to be. It is on that site that Bio High Tech wants to construct a 72,000-square-foot, $35 million facility that would convert waste products into fuel for operations like steel mills and cement plants. Riverkeeper and other groups, including the local Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, are joining county legislators in expressing concern that material being processed in the pits at Bio High Tech could eventually seep into the Hudson River. Read more about this story in the Times Union. William Grimes is reporting for the New York Times that Milton Glaser, a graphics designer best known for his 1967 poster of Bob Dylan, as well as the iconic I Heart New York logo, died on June 25th, his 91st birthday, in Manhattan. His wife, Shirley Glaser, said the cause was a stroke. Glaser was born in the Bronx to Hungarian immigrants. His father, Eugene, owned a dry cleaning and tailoring shop. His mother, Eleanor, was a homemaker. He knew from an early age that he wanted to draw. After twice failing the entrance exam for Pratt Institute, he was eventually accepted by Cooper Union. Glaser and several of his former Cooper Union classmates formed Pushpin Studios in 1954, where he opened up design to countless influences and styles that began to grab the attention of magazines and advertising agencies, largely through the studio's publication, the Pushpin Almanac. For the Dylan poster, a promotional piece included in Bob Dylan's Greatest Hits, Glaser created an outline of the singer's head and based on a black and white self-portrait silhouette by Marcel Duchamp and added thick wavy bands of hair, color for the hair, forms he imported from Islamic art. I Heart New York was the logo Glaser created for a 1977 campaign to promote tourism in New York State. Sketched on the back of an envelope with a red crayon during a taxi ride, it was printed in black letters in a chubby typeface with a cherry red heart standing in for the word love. Glaser, along with editor Clay Felker in 1968, founded New York Magazine, where he was president and design director until 1977. Read the full story in the New York Times and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts there is a 50% chance of rain on Sunday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible after noon with a high near 80. Sunday night, there's just a 20% chance of rain, partly cloudy skies, and a low around 60. Monday, again, there's a chance of isolated showers, about a 40% chance. Scattered showers and thunderstorms after 11 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 79 and a low around 58. Tuesday, again, there's a 40% chance of scattered showers with thunderstorms also possible afternoon. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high of 76 and a low around 60. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Milad H. Mazari of Murray, Utah. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School going into Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student of MC Smith, and I'm going to fifth grade this year. Yay!
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to the library.
Okay. Nice.
Yay.
Yay.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, bookish things.
Yeah. And we're usually here with our friends AJ and Mashuda and sometimes Fahim. But today it's just the three of us, unless somebody joins us a little later. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about some books. Or yeah. Bookish things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or just things.
Or just things?
Yeah.
What is a thing that you would like to talk about?
So we watched the movie The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. So it's basically about this boy who was just born. He just like came into the world. And then when the caretaker is looking at him, she says, "Oh, he looks old," and she like comments on how he looks. And so he basically grows up living in a senior center, I think it's called. And so he basically ages backwards. Well, he actually doesn't age backwards, but like he looks like he ages backwards.
So his body sort of ages backwards.
Well, his body ages backwards.
But his mind ages forward, maybe, in some ways.
Yeah. And there are a lot of characters that he met. And there was this one character that was really funny. I can't remember what the character's name was, but like every single time he came on screen, he was like, did I tell you about the 7 times I got struck by lightning? And one of them was he went to the mailbox, he opened the mailbox, and then he got struck by lightning. And ouch. So he was basically, the story was being narrated by this one girl and visiting her grandma, mom, I don't know if it's basically about this girl narrating the story of Benjamin Button, and she's reading it to someone in the hospital, and the person who's in the hospital is named Daisy, and she's about to die, I'm going to guess, because she's in the hospital. They're like saying, oh, she's going to like die soon or something. And so it was a pretty interesting movie. And I feel bad for Daisy because she had an unfortunate event in her life. Mm-hmm. And also found out that the movie's going to be gone off of Netflix on July 1st. So guys better watch the movie. I recommend it 10 out of 10. It was awesome.
Well, the good news is if you don't have Netflix or if you miss it, the library can now request items to be brought in to borrow. So if,
yay.
And we're doing curbside pickup. So if you wanted to borrow that on DVD, or if you wanted to borrow the short story that it's based on, which is by F. Scott Fitzgerald, you could request that book or movie and we could get it for you and schedule awesome. A pickup.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm so excited to get more books and movies and music from the library. I've missed it so much. I feel like everybody thought that because I worked here and I had a key to here that I was able to borrow all sorts of stuff, but that's not the case. I did check out a lot before we closed, but the delivery didn't start until today. So I've been quite limited.
So since you deliver, I just came up with the best idea. I could return our overdue books because they actually went overdue when quarantine started, I think. Yeah.
They're probably not overdue because we extended all the due dates.
Oh, okay.
Ta-da!
So, since even though they're probably not overdue, I'm probably going to try to trade in for the book Ghosts.
Cool.
Amazing.
Yay.
Okay. Yay.
Yeah, I read Ghosts during quarantine. I wasn't actually quarantined. But during this pandemic closure time, I read Ghosts.
Oh, what'd you think of it?
I thought it was great. I mean, I love Raina Telgemeier, so it did not disappoint. I think drama is still my favorite, but Ghosts was great. I think Ghosts was as good as all of her memoir ones.
Yeah, and also over this quarantine, so a game that I play has been updated and you can trade in that game. And so I was getting ready and I was like, oh, let's go into the intergalactic trading hub. And I was like, I'm excited. I'm going to get all of my stuff on. I'm going to even get my bow on. I'm going to learn how to make my skirt glow so I can be accepted by the aliens. And then I went under the light and I'm like, yes, I'm ready to get sucked up into their spaceship. And it said level 75, and I was only like level 19. I still am kind of sad now.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's why I try to level up at least 4 times a day.
I saw my nephew this past weekend and he was playing a game that is an old game that my sister and I used to play when we were kids on our computer. And we're old, so the game is much different than the games that you play today. But it's just so funny watching him play this game. And he figured out like all the shortcuts and stuff pretty quickly. But it's just interesting because it's such an old style. It's like super flat looking. You have to like type all of the commands. So you have to tell your character what to say or do. But also he's been relying on cheats that you can find online. Like every once in a while, I mean, he figures some stuff out for himself, but every once in a while he wants to know like, what do I do next? And we'll look up cheats for him. But my sister and I were like, how on earth did we figure this out back in the day? Because back in the day, we won the game. And it was like a storytelling type game. But I have no idea how we knew what to do or figured out what to do, because we didn't have cheats back then, because there was no internet when we played this game. If you can believe that. Anyways, did you play any games this pandemic period, Amelia?
I've been playing Slime Rancher. It's a cute little game where you ranch slimes and you raise them and you hybridize them and you get money because you're ranching the slimes. And it's so much fun and it's so cute. And I love it with all my heart.
What's a slime? Yeah.
They're just little blobs, but they're like different kinds. My favorites are the tabbies because they have cat ears. They're so cute. And I love it so much.
Yes. Slime Rancher, one of my favorites.
It's such a fun game.
Yeah. Did you find the fire slime yet?
Yeah, I have. I actually started the whole game over because I wanted to play it from the beginning because I had everything and I didn't want to have everything anymore. So I started over, but I did find the fire slimes and they're very hard to feed.
Yeah.
They're so difficult to feed, but I love them so much.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you have a book or a bookish thing that you wanted to talk about?
Yes.
Aside from slime. What is it? Slime Ranchers?
Slime Rancher. I love the game is called Slime Rancher. It's so much fun. It's so much fun and it's so cute. So I have picked up a couple books, three books. I finished the first one literally a few minutes ago. They're books of short horror stories, and oh my gosh, I'm going to have to explain so much about. So I'm going to start talking about something, but I promise it ties back to this. There's a video game franchise called Five Nights at Freddy's. It is a horror game. The first game came out in 2014, but they are still making games. And somewhere along the line, they started making short books, like stories and stuff like that, that took place within the same world as the games. And then they just refused to stop making books. So it's at a point now where this video game franchise has more books in it than there are video games. So I thought that was funny, but that's basically the context behind all this. There are three out so far. Two more are coming out, and there's a rumor that two more after that are also coming out. But I have the first three that are out, and I finished the first one just a couple minutes ago. And it's very strange. Each book has three short horror stories in it. And it's like all of them start as if like R.L. Stine was writing them, but then R.L. Stine just passed the book to Stephen King. So there's this really weird like escalation of intensity in these stories, but they're still pretty good.
Are they connected in any way, or are they all separate?
They're all separate. They're all individual stories. Like, you could read these books without playing the games and you'd probably still get a lot of entertainment out of them.
Can you tell us a little bit about one that you liked?
I liked the last one the most, probably because it was the most intense. It's called, can't remember the title of this one. Each one has a separate title. Here it is. I found it. The second story in the book is called To Be Beautiful, which is about a girl who, a very young, I think she's 14 in the story, who finds a little robotic doll in the trunk of a car in a scrapyard and saves it from the trunk of the car. And the doll ends up like coming to life and saying that it can make her wishes come true and she wishes to be beautiful. So every night the doll has to put her to sleep, and every morning she wakes up with a new feature on her body looking more appealing than she thought it was. And it just goes on and on like that. And obviously, you know, something darker is going on, but you don't find out until the end. And it was pretty good.
Ooh, creepy.
Oh,
yeah.
So who wrote the books that you read? What is the book based off of again?
A video game series.
Oh, so who wrote the books?
So there are three short story books currently out. There are two coming out, and then there are three story books in a series that came out before these. That's eight books. The first three that were like a series and told a coherent story were written by the same guy who made the games. These are co-written by the guy who made the games and another author.
Oh.
And what's the book called, the one that you just read?
The first one is called Into the Pit.
Is that one of the short story titles too?
Yes, it is. It's actually my least favorite of all the three in here, but you know, I guess it got to be the cover title.
It has a cool name.
It does have a cool name. The second one is called Fetch, and the third one is called 1:35 a.m.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes, they're pretty cool. I read the first one, and I liked it. It was fun.
Have you played the game? Or games?
I've played the first three, and I didn't go beyond three because of a very funny reason. It's because I'm a coward. And the fourth one requires you, like, it's an actual, like, gameplay mechanic. You have to turn the volume up. There's a point where you have to, like, open a door and listen, and if you hear something, you're not supposed to do something, but if you don't hear something, you're supposed to do something else. And if you do the wrong thing, you'll get jump scared. And I was too scared to play it because all the other games I could play with the volume down, but I couldn't with that one. Hmm. So yeah, I've played the first three. I think there are like six out now, six games, and another one is on the way. It's wild.
That sounds fun. And those books sound right up your alley.
Yeah, they're very fun.
Well, I just finished a much different book. It's it's a novel for middle grade. It's called The Only Black Girls in Town. It's by Brandy Colbert, and it's her debut middle grade novel, but she's written books for teens before, and I've read one that I really liked called Little and Lion, but this one is for middle grade. The main character's name is Alberta, and she lives in a beach town, and she loves surfing, and she's the only black girl in town, hence the name, The Only Black Girls in Town. And her best friend is Laramie. And they're really tight. They've been best friends since fourth grade. They do everything together. And then at one point, the bed and breakfast across the street from where Alberta lives, a new family moves in. And the family is also black. And there's a 12-year-old daughter. And so them being neighbors and also being able to connect on the fact that they're the only two black girls in town, they become fast friends and start hanging out a lot. Meanwhile, Laramie, who is Alberta's best friend, starts hanging out with and seeming interested in being friends with a girl named Nicolette, who has always been mean to Alberta and just sort of unnecessarily aggressive towards her. And so Alberta has some feelings around that too and isn't sure why her friend is choosing to hang out with somebody that is so mean to her. So they're sort of drifting apart slightly, although still connected, while she's making new friends with the girl across the street. And then, so in addition to all of that sort of stuff that's going on, Edie, the new girl, and Alberta, the main character, find some journals in the attic of the bed and breakfast, and they start reading them and becoming really interested in the story and the history of the person that wrote it, and trying to find out more about them and see if they can connect that person with their journals or connect the journals with at least a family member of that person. So there's that's going on. And then there's also some of the story is around Alberta's family. She has two dads, and she was born through a surrogate who was close with her father's. And she's still close with the woman that's her birth mother, her biological mother. And her name's Denise, and Denise comes back to town, and Denise and her husband or partner are having a baby as well. And so there's some focus on that as well, and like how Alberta feels about the fact that she's going to have a sort of sister soon and what that means for her. So it's an interesting book. It has a lot going on, but not in a clunky way.
It's cool.
Very interesting. And the characters are all nice and realistic. And I like one of the things about Edie is that she's goth. And some of the kids in school decide that she's a poser because they've never seen a black person that's dressed as a goth before. And so they think that she's like trying to be somebody that she's not, when Alberta knows from getting to know her that that's truly, you know, how she likes to dress and who she is. Hmm. But yeah, it was a very nice book. I listened to it on audio. I had a long car ride, so it kept me entertained during the car ride.
Nice.
And now I get to go on to a new book. Yay! That's one of the perks of finishing up a book. You get to read something else. So what does everyone else have next in line to read? Sounded like Lena might want to read Ghosts again next.
Yeah, I want to also read And Steal from My Brother, Maximum Ride.
Oh yeah, the James Patterson series?
Yeah, my brother got it, so I'm probably going to steal it from his closet.
Ha ha ha. Unless he hears this radio show and is on to you and hides them away.
Last time I checked, he doesn't listen to the radio show.
Well, I know our friend Ingrid, who used to be a Bound by Books co-host, loved Maximum Ride back in the day, back when she was in high school. She like loved that series. I've never read it, but I probably should have. Just like I should probably read Wings of Fire at some point, because I like to try to read
the favorites. About them now. I finally found a Wings of Fire book that I don't like, and I don't know how to deal with that. I'm like going through mourning. I don't like the newest book. Luckily, it's just an extra. It's one of the legends, so I don't need to read it to understand what's happening in the story. But I just cannot get into it. I don't care about the humans in a world with dragons. And that's what this book is trying to get me to like, and I just can't. So I might just read a summary of it online. At least I own it. At least I own it. My collection isn't incomplete, because that would really bother me.
Yeah. So I know you have your two other horror short story collections to read.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you have on your to read list?
I don't know. Hopefully when the other two of these come out, I'll be able to read those as well. I'm in a pretty like linear spot right now.
Yeah. Focusing in on the short horrors.
Yeah.
With the volume off.
With the volume off. Luckily books don't have volume, so
that would be horrible if they did.
It would
be. Oh my
horrific.
Goodness, like those greeting cards that like sing to you or whatever.
Oh no.
You turn a page and it screams at you. That's the jump scare.
I wouldn't be able to trust books ever again.
Yeah.
You'd have to be like, does this have a battery in it? We're just about out of time for today. So we're going to say farewell and wish everyone a happy week filled with lots of great books and bookish things and limited jump scares.
Yeah.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Into the void of space, we shine a light, a flickering force, moving at eternal pace. On an infinite voyage, explore the magic. We are never too old for new worlds to align. Life is not a race, but a moment to embrace the journey. What we share, if it's alright.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Back in February, actually March, we had to postpone all our shows. We're working on a couple of shows because of COVID. We had to postpone it. And it was a nice break for me, you know, being home. As you know, I retired from the state. I worked 30 years and retired 2 years ago. And then I decided to start, you know, the theater thing full time. And then we were doing fine full time, and then until we had for COVID. And then this thing started with the Black Lives Matter thing, watching back in May with the killing of George Floyd. And, you know, this was like the point for me. I mean, Breonna and Armory, all, you know, we keep seeing it over and over. And then when George Floyd came in that day, when we all watching on television, then, you know, it's like, I'm just seeing myself right there. That could just, you know, could be me. I mean, I'm a little older than this guy, but it could be me. It could be another brothers and sisters, you know, or friends out there. And then it's going on for hundreds of years. That's when I decided, you know, I can't sleep on that because I speak through theater. I have to do something to raise my voice, to speak. And then I realized, you know, just doing it alone, it's not loud enough. So I reach out to a couple of theater in a group that can work with me on this. So I call Cap Rep Maggie at Capitol Rep Theater and David at Troy Foundry. And then I talked to them and they decided to take, you know, go along with me. So we talked, we met, and then me and the Black Theater Troupe, I'm leading the project. And then we decided to let's get four more theaters involved. So I called a few other theater companies and I told them about the project, my plan, my idea. And then they all decided, okay, let's do this. This is really important. And then because of this, what happened to George and, you know, with the amount of time it takes for him to, you know, to die, 8 minutes and 46 seconds, we decided, let's call it that. And then we've been working on it. 846, that's the title of the project. And then between me, Cap Rep, and Troy Foundry, they're working on the background stuff, the technical stuff. And then and me, I'm out there putting the show together, talking to all the other theater companies and the media and, you know, everybody to put it out there. And we, the three theater company, the four other theater company involved are the acting with Aaron. Aaron Moore is another Black guy who, you know, that's his company. He's a very talented actor and director and Creative Action Unlimited with Michael Kennedy. And then Troy Illuminate Theater started by Morgan Elizabeth Hayward. And then and Playhouse Stage, the Park Playhouse. So those are the other four. What happened is each of those theater company, they have to submit a piece. It could be a play, a monologue, it could be a song, it could be, you know, any kind of performance, but they have to submit a recorded video and send it to me. And each piece has to be 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
You have always worked with experimental ideas in performance. You've worked with dance, you've worked with music, you've worked with poetry, yes. You've worked with anything. And as artistic director of this project, I think it's magnificent. Do you have that kind of variety happening?
Yes, yes. Each of those theater companies, there's different subject, which is, I mean, so powerful. And, you know, I have the piece that I put in is about civil rights. It's about Albert Jordan. It's a piece about him. It's a lot to see about him with Barbara Howard, a local actress and director and singer. She's in my show performing for my piece. And then Tony Poloni. And then we have the other companies doing plays and doing things about police brutality. All the pieces has be all related, you know, to what's going on right now. Even if it did happen 300 years ago, those things still happening today. Even different, the same kind of thing, but different subject.
What I find interesting is that we're so accustomed to going to the theater, experiencing something together.
Right.
In a room, in a building, in a situation where there's live action and we connect with it. We connect with it. We feel the sweat. We understand the pain or the humor or the irony of it all. These are really important issues you're bringing up in this production of 846. How can that passion, how can that come through on a screen? I want to know how you're going to be able to do that.
I'm glad you asked that. Each company that I asked to participate, who agreed to participate, they submit their own piece. And they have it either live or on Zoom, and then they record it. Each piece is 8 minutes and 46 seconds last. They record it, and then they send it to me. So that's a total of 7 recorded pieces. And then we have a tech crew put all those pieces together and edit them. All of them going to be together. And on June 30th, it's going to be aired. You know, all those pieces together with some other stuff we add to it. But all those pieces are going to be together. Our tech people are going to take them and put them together. And then we're going to view all those on June 30th.
How can we see it then? You have to tell us.
Yes, it's going to be on Facebook Live and Facebook Watch on the Black Theater Troupe Facebook page.
Okay, and we can just go to Black Theater Troupe Facebook.
Black Theater Troupe Facebook, and then after the airing, the view, you watch it, and then we're going to switch to Zoom for a talkback.
Oh,
and then
lovely.
For a talkback, and then there will be a link to tell you, okay, now the show is over, it would like you to stay, hang around, and then so for the talk back, at the beginning of the night, I will be talking, give an introduction and introduce myself and then talk about it a little bit and then it starts right after that.
So your message is coming out this way through 846. Is there anything positive about this? I mean, what worries me is that I find everything so depressing right now. And that's why I was thinking that music, you know, has an influence over you, and how can we bring that uplifting feeling in the theater, especially on a flat screen?
Right.
How can we do that?
I mean, right now everything is depressing. Okay, the good thing for me, my philosophy, what I see right now, I'm feeling, you know, if you had asked me a couple of months ago, you know, how am I doing with everything's going on, and you know, I'll probably start crying before I answer you. I'll probably have a few tears in my eyes before I said anything back to you because you know, if our people have been dying and nothing's being done about it. Today, I'm a little different. You know, you ask me how am I doing, I may have the same tears in my eyes, but it's mostly tears of joy because of the movement and the revolution. You know, people are paying attention and you know, changes. People are, you know, a lot of changes going on right now. The world is watching. So, and I'm just happy to be alive, you know, to see this movement, you know, so I'm feeling a little different, more positive, and, you know, even though people are still dying, you know, but there's a saying that says, if the mountain was smooth, you couldn't climb it. So it's going to take some time. More people might be dying, but there is a revolution. Things are changing. You know, I feel better because people say enough is enough. We got to do something about it. 846 is, you know, I mean, there's nothing happy about it, unfortunately, because that's why we're raising our voice to tell our stories, what's going on in, you know, white privileges, white fragility, and you know, kids who lost their fathers, and those are the kind of stories. But those are stories that will remind people. That's our way of protesting, okay? Which is why I did this. That's my way of protesting and get theater companies with me to continue the movement. So that's why we're doing this. And you'll take a lot. People will learn a lot. We'll take a lot from that, and then hopefully they'll go out and take it to their families and tell them what's going on, and let's continue changing the world. And this is how artists protest. Sometimes we don't even go out to protest, but we do it on stage. We do it, you know, if you're a poet, you know, you're right, and about injustice and racism. And that's what this is about for 846.
Jean Rame, thank you so much. I thank you.
Yeah.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Peter Spear, who is spearheading. God, that is so brilliant. Who is spearheading the shared speech? Shared streets. The shared streets project that is going to be in play tomorrow. Tomorrow, will it start at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Peter?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow,
10 a.m.
3 days in a row this weekend, and it's experimental. It's changeable. And what else do you want to tell us about it, Peter?
So this is the trial weekend for the Shared Summer Streets. And I guess, what do I want to tell you about it? So Friday, Saturday, Sunday from 10 a.m. to 8:30 in the evening, the blocks of Warren Street will be essentially kind of closed down to create space for businesses to extend into the parking space and to sort of give us all just an opportunity to experience our city and our streets differently, and to develop, I guess, begin the process of learning how we might live together in a pandemic safely. This is the beginning of a process, and next week, Monday, I think we'll have a survey, and we're counting traffic. We counted traffic last week. We're going to count traffic this week, try to learn and see how it goes.
I understand a lot of the project. I'm not quite sure I understand. Why are you counting traffic? How does that figure into the whole thing?
So we counted traffic last week at 9 sort of key intersections off of Warren to get a sense of what's the traffic flow on a normal weekend. And then we'll do it again this weekend with the shared streets in place to understand how the shared streets impact the traffic at different intersections.
I see. Because
it'll help.
Are you trying to drive traffic to the intersections, right? Across streets or not?
I think we're just trying to learn. Honestly.
Okay.
We're trying to see what happens. Where do people go? Where do people go?
Yeah.
And how do they use the city streets differently when we do this? And basically to inform maybe other decisions that could be made in the future.
So is it all down Warren Street? Or is it going to be branched out?
It's from Front Street to 7th Street.
Okay.
And Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There were discussions about expanding it to other locations, Front Street, and then over by Little Debs. For this trial period, it's Front Street to 7th Street on Warren.
Cool. And then possibly like around Bliss area, like over there. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Certainly, it's an open conversation. I mean, this has been a real community effort, you know. Certainly myself and Hudson Hall have been doing a lot of the legwork, and Kaya Kuhl, these urban designers that we brought in to help us, whatever, just to bring the professional discipline of urban design to our problem. But the goal really is to have an open conversation about what we might do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this weekend, you're going to be doing it with pretty much just what we have available, both at the DPW and the county DPW. So it might not look the prettiest, right?
No, it's going to be pretty scrappy.
Yeah.
And that's the benefit, really, of this approach, is that we're not spending a ton of money on infrastructure. We're not setting up anything that's, like, super substantial. We're just kind of trying to make we're trying to do as little as possible and learn, and so we can sort of flex and adapt and see how it goes.
So a couple questions that I was asked recently were like, who's going to evaluate it and decide what to change and how to change it? And
yeah, so so I told you about the traffic counting. We'll,
mm-hmm.
Kaya and her team will analyze that. We did a survey before. We have surveys ready to go for businesses and residents and also visitors that will release for, I think, 48 hours after on Sunday. We'll just tally that data and present it to the city, I think. I mean, I think the ultimate decision rests with the mayor and the city to either continue it or to adapt. That's the full question to yours.
Yeah, when someone asked me that, I realized it's got to be the mayor, because the mayor had to issue an executive order to allow this to happen. You know, because everybody, I know since I've been in office, everybody thinks the common council is all powerful, but that was a joke. By the way, But in fact, a lot of powers do rest with the mayor and other entities in the city.
The mayor's office, there's hardly, you know, there's not very many people employed at all, right? There's only like one assistant.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It'd be really cool if the mayor's office could cover it. I guess it's just because of the way that, you know, money is allocated in our city, that it would be, you know, left on the county and city Department of Public Works.
Yeah, you know, the city's relationship with the county has always been difficult. It's coming more to a head now that we're so far ahead of them in so many ways. And yet we contribute as much as anybody to their budget. And the question is, do we get a proper proportion back in all the services that they fund? They have tons of money, I'm told. I haven't gotten really involved in county politics, but, you know, that's what our supervisors are supposed to be doing. And, you know, when you hear about funds for things like, you know, traffic barriers and all that stuff, they got tons of money. And, you know, we just seem to reuse the same junky stuff all the time. But if this works, this project, we will not only get it new barriers and all that kind of stuff that look kind of nice, we'll have them for the future, for other That's events, great. You know, and stop using these ugly bollards, that, you know, pieces of concrete and all that crap. Something that looks a little attractive with perhaps a planter or something like that. I mean, right?
Plants.
My wife sent me a screenshot of something in New York City where a couple neighborhoods have already started doing the shared streets.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're behind us in the phases.
Yeah, right. So the idea, because one of the questions that came up at a meeting the other night was, you know, we're still actually in the pandemic, and doesn't this encourage just more people to be piled on top of each other? But in fact, the answer is it actually opens a wider space to walkers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the drive. That's the entire impetus for this project is the creative use of shared public space to be safe in an unprecedented global pandemic, where we know that the research indicates that being indoors is unsafe.
Right.
And that the virus spreads in enclosed spaces. A community like Hudson benefits by making the best use of the public space. So it's really, I mean, this comes up a lot because it triggers expectations of gathering and crowds and, you know, a commercial kind of festival. And I've heard people talk about it that way. But we don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
And we don't know who's going to come, how many people are going to come. We do know that we are reopening. And that, and this is a way of being prepared. I was talking to, because I've become sort of a pedestrian advocate. I've been part of this program at the state level, sort of like a walking college, you know, and they sort of support.
I bet you Rebecca would like that. Sorry.
The walking college. It's good. And I was talking to my mentor, it's got Jeff Olson, who's a planner with Alta Planning, and he's done work in Hudson. I think he's a lead or involved in the Empire State Trail. You know, and he describes pretty clearly that, you know, this we're planning for the long haul. You know what I mean? This isn't like we return to normal in 6 weeks and it's like it was 6 months ago. We have no idea what's coming.
Right.
And what we're doing now really sets the stage and gives my hope is that it gives us a real advantage. Moving forward, that we've done this kind of legwork and we've started this kind of process of experimentation to, rethink how we live as a community using our streets.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like that's the conversation that I feel like I'm in and I want very much to have as a community.
Right. And that was definitely very much the impetus to your group Future Hudson. And I think this kind, the projects you've been involved with lately, you know, come out of that kind of impulse that motivated a fantastic lecture series here in Hudson last year. Some of the people, it's amazing how this kind of synergy happens when you bring in people who are interesting and then reality comes in and you actually need these people, you know, like Chris, like Kaya Kuhl, like Mike Lydon. There's all these kind of interesting people out there, and Hudson never really has always been very isolated from very reluctant to bring in so-called experts because, you know, I don't blame them. Who trusts experts? But the key is finding the right ones. You know what I mean? Finding people that who really show you that their expertise is grounded in something real. You know, they're not just blowhards who say, "Oh, I do this, I do that."
I heard there was the possibility of for because as we know, you know, Warren Street is, you know, demographically very white, and a lot of the businesses and business owners are white. So, but there are a lot of black and brown business owners that don't have space on Warren Street. And so I heard talk that it's possible that there will be like an extension for people to actually open up like stores on the street.
There is.
To sell stuff from their businesses.
Well, I'll let Peter answer that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the as a basic description of what the Shared Summer Streets program is, there's two